Hello and welcome to Growing Up B2B. I'm Ed D'Elia, president of D'Elia Associates, the place where B2B brands go to grow. For over 60 years, and now across two generations, we've been helping B2B companies achieve next-level growth through brand distinction, quality lead generation, and sales enablement. Growing Up B2B was created for family business leaders who are passionate about growth, legacy, and making a lasting impact. Whether it's a multi-generational legacy or multiple family members working together, there's something truly magical about blending business with family. And we want to celebrate that right here on Growing Up B2B. So be sure to stick around to the end of the show and find out how you can be our next guest. Okay, let's get into it. Hello and welcome to another episode of Growing Up B2B. Today we're speaking with Jason Markajohn, president of Dunaway, a family-driven engineering and manufacturing company that has become a trusted name in extrusion press technology for over four decades. Jason leads the next generation of the business, working alongside his sister to uphold the company's legacy of precision craftsmanship while steering it into a new territory, most notably through innovations in AI-driven manufacturing. Under his leadership, Dunaway has doubled in size, built deeper relationships with global extrusion partners, and introduced groundbreaking safety and efficiency technologies. Jason, welcome to Growing Up B2B.
Thanks, Ed. Appreciate it.
Great to have you today. So, Jason, for those not familiar with the company Dunaway, can you give us a quick backstory? What do you guys do and who do you serve?
Yeah, so Dunaway was started by Mike Dunaway in 1981. So it's probably that'd be 44 years now. So he started off with just a little small shop here. He started off just making small parts for the aluminum extrusion industry. He worked in it his entire life. I believe he started when he was about 15 or 16 years old. And he's done every job imaginable in the aluminum extrusion industry. He worked for several companies that, you know, one of which was actually his competitor for 40 years. And then he started his own thing. So we service the aluminum extrusion industry. We do replacement parts, upgrades. We'll do rebuilds, installs, move presses, the engineering behind it, and field service. So if somebody breaks down, they call us and we'll come out and help them get back up and running as quickly as possible. So we have a lot of trusted customers that have stayed with us over the years and certainly through our transition of my ownership of the company. So yeah.
Was that a tricky transition? Did it take time for customers that maybe have been loyal to the previous owner or familiarity with the previous owner to, I guess, be okay with you as the new leader?
It actually was quite smooth. So Mike hung out for about 3 years, maybe a little bit more. We didn't tell everybody. We just kind of like silently changed hands. And then because he had a deep relationship with a lot of the owners of the facilities, because again, being in the industry that long, you really grow up with the other companies, right? You help them grow through their expansions. And obviously you become friends, you become family. He was able to just talk to them and say, hey, yeah, this is what's going on. And I'm still here. He basically continued to run the company, even though I owned it, sat right next to him. I'm just sitting there, okay, what do you want me to do, Mike? Because I don't know anything here. I just sat next to him as almost like an engineering intern for the first several months. But
So I take it, Jason, that you didn't walk in with 44 years of extrusion support skill sets and expertise.
I did.
That's
not
what you came in with. Okay.
No, it was a leap of faith on my part to say, all right, I have some engineering background. Let's see if I can do any of this.
So I got to dig deeper on that one. So you had a personal connection to the Dunaway family. So before meeting Mike and coming across that, as I understand it, you didn't really know the Dunaway company per se, right? So that was all new to you. And you come in, you assess it. Talk about that. What convinced you to say, hey, this is something I should take on? Just talk about that moment and what was going through your head at that moment.
So I guess, just to give the backstory. So Mike's daughter, Maggie, and my wife went to school together, I think, since first grade.
Oh, wow. Okay.
So they went to school all the way through. Obviously remained friends past high school because Maggie had come over to our house, and we had just had our first son. She was coming to meet him for the first time. And she was just talking that her dad was looking to sell the company. And I was like, hey, I'll buy it. What's he do? And so that was the moment that I was like, oh, I'm gonna go buy this company.
So in that time, were you, Jason, were you in that sort of mode? Were you looking to buy something? Was that kind of why you were so quick to put your hand up, literally?
Yeah, I always collected a paycheck, and I looked around me and I'm like, God, there's some stupid people running these companies. I got to be able to do this at least a little bit better, right? And just be able to fumble into money, right? But I always had the drive to want to own my own thing, be my own boss. So when the opportunity came up, it was a very good opportunity for obviously myself and my family, because we had that personal connection with Mike. I knew Mike again. So my wife grew up knowing Maggie and the family and all that. And we had gone to Maggie's daughter's birthday parties and stuff, and Mike was there. So I knew Mike. Mike knew me.
Oh, that's okay. So there was a bit of a relationship foundation there.
And
a
yeah.
Connection to in the spirit of long-term friendship too. So it wasn't like a total stranger by any means.
Okay. And my wife and I, we go back to high school. We were high school sweethearts. I actually knew her back in middle school, but we didn't actually get together until high school. And then we've been together 22 years, married for 12. Yeah, having obviously that long relationship with my wife and then her friends. So I've known Maggie, obviously, almost as long. Not like a direct, like Maggie was one of my direct friends. I've known of her and then obviously eventually became a direct friend through my wife.
And you got your wife who's more or less vouching for the family because she had that strong, maybe a stronger familiarity and connection. Okay. Right. So an easy, easier segue than a total stranger.
Yeah, exactly. I think if I was just like, oh, I'm going to go talk to your dad and I'm going to try to buy it, I think it would have gone differently had I just been some random dude that was a friend or the husband of a friend of a person. So yeah, definitely that strong personal connection through my wife definitely helped Mike be more willing to deal with me versus somebody else that actually was trying to buy the company at that time.
To bring this back around to the family connection, your sister is also involved in the business. So talk about that for a minute, your role, your sister's role, how that came to be.
So my sister, it goes back to pretty early on. So I've owned the company for now four and three quarter years now. And she was working at some place and they were an hour. That's a moot point, but they just weren't giving her their hours. I'm like, come work for me. I'll find something for you to do. And you work whatever hours you want.
So are you older brother, younger? Where you guys sit in age, you and your sister?
Yeah, so I'm the middle child. I have an older brother. And then my sister is about 8 years younger than me.
Okay.
She was just working some odd jobs. And I was like, oh, come in. So she, literally, she said, what do you want me to do? I'm like, I don't know. And go clean my office. Just start working. And she was working in the back, working her butt off, getting sweaty, working in the shop, cleaning up machines, collecting chips, dumping them in the hopper. And then eventually she started coming into the office and working on doing job sheets and some data entry stuff. And then has progressed into full-time office person doing a lot of the payables and stuff. If anybody's out there listening that we owe money to, it's her fault. But besides, she takes a day off. I'm like, cool, I'm not going to spend any money today. So yeah, take the rest of the week off. Have at it.
So but ultimately following a similar path you did, learning it from the ground up, if you will.
Yeah.
Okay. And what a great asset to have. Can you trust more than your younger sister to be looking after your affairs and to have your back and you hers?
Yeah. And handling all the money. So that's,
there you go.
Maybe I should think that a little deeper. Anyways. And then my father-in-law also works for me.
Oh, okay.
Which is interesting because back in college and a little bit in high school, he had a engineering manufacturing company that I went and worked for.
Okay.
And he gave me the freedom to, I had this grand idea. I was going to make these, back in the day, everybody was into cars and stuff. I still am, but everybody was into modifying cars and the neon craze and the Lambo doors. Everybody wanted their doors to flip up. So I was like, I'll just go design my own. I'm not going to spend $800 or $1,000 on these hinges. I'll just go design my own. So he actually paid me to go play with this idea that never really worked. We had a bit of a prototype. It was going to need some tweaking, but he paid me to do all that. So it's kind of, I think, paying it forward or paying it backward. Works here. He actually just got a kidney transplant. So right now he's on medical leave, if you will.
Okay.
But he'll be back shortly. And obviously when you get a transplant, you're on a bunch of drugs.
Sure.
So that you don't reject the new organ. So he's immunocompromised. So we'll bring him back probably in December-ish.
Okay, we certainly wish him well in his recovery, and another great asset to have, and somebody that actually did what you're doing, ran a specialty manufacturing operation. Obviously, yours is a bit more oriented to servicing, but still, there's some engineering and manufacturing know-how part of the mix.
Yeah, he did very similar to what we do. He built debrush and deburring machines for the tube industry. We also build extrusion presses here. So we have a line of extrusion presses, generally up to about 500 tons, but we can go a little bit bigger. And those are generally sold to the silver extrusion industry. But we have customers running copper and lead and various other specialty alloys on the presses. It's very similar to what he was doing. Got a design of a machine, had a fab shop, and they built it in-house.
So you
So
have the capacity and expertise to actually build a from ground up custom machine. You can do. Oh,
full
wow, okay.
extrusion press. We're starting to get a little more into some automation stuff. The obviously we'll talk, I'm sure we'll talk about the AI stuff a little bit later, but to
Since
one
you brought it
customer.
up,
Right.
Jason, let's jump into it.
Yeah.
I know you recently entered the realm of AI, bringing visual AI-driven intelligence into right now exclusively extrusion manufacturing. Talk about that for a moment. How did that come about? How did you come to say, let's go for it, let's get into this category? Just talk about that for a minute, if you would.
Yeah, so obviously it's all the craze. Everybody knows it, everybody loves it, everybody wants it. Obviously, people have mixed feelings about it because there's always two sides of the coin. But I feel like from a manufacturing standpoint, from a business standpoint, we need to embrace it, we need to use it, we need to sell it. I got a newsletter. Somebody was giving a talk about their software, this AI software, and they have the technology to take video, and you can train the AI to look at that video for different things. For example, if that video, if you wanted to see how many people walked into your store wearing a hat, you can train it and say, oh, a ball cap. How many people are wearing glasses? How many people have necklaces on, watches on? And that AI will learn and develop and be able to tell you. And you can actually pull a lot of analytics from it if you wanted to, if that was your strategy. I see it as a safety thing. There's a lot of cameras out there that already do it, but they're very expensive. They have all the AI built into them. You can train it to do whatever, several things, but every camera you're buying, it's a $10,000 package per camera. With this software and the pricing structure that they have, I can take that software, be the integrator, and now I can take that and put however many cameras I want on essentially one PC. The PC's got to be pretty powerful, so it's you're going to have some money into the implementation of it. But once you have the core, the foundation of what you need for just one camera, adding additional cameras is very easy to do. So the first idea I was trying to pitch to a local company was just checking to make sure that the aluminum, so when you push a billet, all that material, there's always impurities on the outside of the billet. And the way it works is it peels back, and then all that those impurities go to the end of the billet. They call it the butt of the billet. So after they extrude a billet, they shear the butt. The problem is if that butt doesn't drop and you close on that piece with your container, you can break a bunch of stuff and then you cause all kinds of downtime. So I was like, oh, we'll just have this system just simply sit there, look and see whether or not the aluminum butt's still there. It'd be very simple to do. But then the other customer came around and said, hey, we want to do some safety stuff because one of the most dangerous spots on an extrusion press, and we'll just focus on the press because there's lots of other dangerous spots around an extrusion line, but
Sure.
it's right in front of the press when you do what's called breakthrough. Which is a brand new die comes in, you load the billet, and you start pushing. Well, if there's anything gets in there or the die breaks or something, you're putting literally thousands of tons of pressure behind that billet to push it through. It's a cannon. So you build all that pressure, and all of a sudden something breaks, it's shooting across your facility. And if somebody's got a body part in front of that, the hole that the material comes out of, it's going with it. You're not going to have that body part
Know,
anymore.
the you can't react to that. It's too fast, right?
Oh, no, it's literally a bullet.
Okay.
It's a cannon going off.
Okay.
And I see it all the time where operators, the press operators, They'll look inside the container or inside the front platen, look and see if that material's come out yet. Well, that's instant. Just take your head right off. So what we came up with is a vision system that looks at the front platen and looks from an angle down the bore of that front platen and just waits for that extrusion to come out. And we've integrated a PLC system that it basically cuts the line out of their wiring so that an operator tries to hit the extrude button. It's not going to extrude. If it sees certain conditions of, oh, there's an operator in front of the press and we haven't broken through yet, you're not going to be able to extrude. And it's just simple. It just cuts that signal. So if you try to hit that button, it won't go.
The camera is integrated then into the actual extrusion press and functions as something of a kill switch or a pause switch.
That's exactly right. Yeah.
When the safety conditions are compromised.
Yes. Yeah. Okay. So that camera, the AI sits there and looks and says, all right, I see a glove. I see a hand. And that's what we focus on is hands and gloves. Somebody wearing a glove still puts their hand there.
Yeah.
Glove's not going to protect you from a bullet, right?
Yeah.
And the camera looks and sees, all right, I see material. That means that it's already broken through. Now the operator is allowed to grab it, pull it downstream. This particular customer that we were doing this at, they don't have a puller system, so it's a very manual operation, which increases the risk of something going wrong if that operator's waiting for that initial breakthrough. But once it's broken through, it's relatively safe. It's really just that breakthrough cycle that becomes that really high risk scenario.
So certainly, obviously, safety functionality seems to make a lot of sense. And for listeners who've never been in an extrusion facility, when there's a workplace injury, it's usually not a Band-Aid. It's usually a trip to the hospital. That's fairly serious injuries can occur if the right safety protocols aren't followed. And essentially using camera technology integrated with AI integrated with the system itself can immediately prevent a workplace injury before it's an occurrence. Beyond that, though, I think there would be even broader implications to the technology you're speaking of. And I'm certainly thinking about in many specialty manufacturing arenas, you've got a veteran workforce that's starting to hit those retirement years. And they look back and there might be somebody younger taking their seat, but oftentimes there's not. And if they are, they're fairly untrained or don't have nearly the expertise that somebody that's a 30-year veteran is walking away with. So can you talk about the technologies as it might relate to training and learning scenarios?
Yeah, what's cool about the technology, the vision system, is you can train it and set up a screen. The screen will just be right there and you can see what the AI is seeing and what it thinks it's seeing. So you can kind of, as an operator, sit there and say, yeah, that's all looking good, right? You can get that quick visual check that, oh, why did the press just jam? Oh, I see my hands there and the alarm's going off on the screen saying, I'll do that. So additionally, you can train it to, the software company has videos where if you're torquing a head on a car, you have to go through a certain particular pattern. And what's cool is you can actually train it to tell the operator which bolt is the next bolt. So you can do live training right there on the screen that the operator, live work instructions. That'd be
sure.
Cool. Yeah. Yeah. You can create a visual work instruction. Hey, no, this is the next bolt you're supposed to torque. So there's a lot of stuff you can do with this system alone, let alone all the AI stuff that we have going on in this world right now.
So in the extrusion business, at least for certain, say, specialty or custom extruders where tolerance and precision are critical, sometimes down to the thousandths of an inch, do you see the visual and AI technology enhancing to be able to start to even detect imperfections that, and take various actions to guide that operator, whereas sometimes the naked eye can't see what AI and the right type of equipment can see?
Yeah, so that's kind of, I would call that phase two or three that I would look into with the system we're developing, primarily because we got to get a faster camera or a better camera and really figure out the angles and the lighting, because it's got to be able to see it, right? So if the system sees bubbles or tears or anything on that material as it's coming out, it can very quickly alert the operator, hey, you didn't do your burp cycle. There's air in the system. We can very easily write some code around the AI and what it's seeing to interpret what the operator needs to change. Hey, you're going too fast. If we can get a camera with enough, I would say, granularity and speed, we might even be able to start tracking some of that size differences. The issue there in trying to measure such a measured material as it's directly coming out is you're limited to pixel size. You can only count pixel, and if your pixel is essentially 1,000 or 5,000ths of an inch, you're going to have a tolerance of plus or minus pretty high with what you're trying to measure. So you may not be able to see exactly, but if there's a huge difference, then it's, oh, wait, stop, what's going on? So there's definitely a lot of quality things. And I've already talked to some local businesses that I'm connected with about possibly bringing this system into their facilities just to look for defects. This is, you got somebody concentrating on one thing all the time for as long as you have that computer on. If you're running 24/7, it's running 24/7. It's not getting tired. It's not getting fatigued. It's not, my phone rang, let me run over here. So it's not getting distracted. So it's going to be spot on pretty much every time. So I'm excited to branch a little bit out, but my core focus with what we're going to do with the AI will be in the aluminum extrusion industry. My goal is to be the AI leader in the aluminum extrusion industry.
Certainly, we have our implications for other industries, though, beyond that. However, right now, that's where the core focus is of Dunaway and has historically always been. Some very deep relationships, I might add, which seem to have transferred across the leadership shift. That said, when we were talking before, being very niche, focused on the aluminum extrusion industry, you don't just serve domestically. From what I understand, you serve clients all over the world. Is that correct?
Yeah. We've had customers. I have some emails right now with some customers in Mexico that they just need help. They have old presses and they need valves. They need all kinds of stuff. So from a hydraulic standpoint, we can offer our expertise to try to help them out. Whether it's just a valve replacement, hey, here's the number, can I get something? We have our channels where we can cross-reference some things, or I put a lot of stuff on our website that we had just laying around the shop. And from that, I've sold two or three items, but two or three items, the one pump I just sold was 10 grand. And it was just sitting in the corner collecting dust. Yeah. There's a lot of stuff that we've collected over the years. We scrap a press, whatever, somehow have acquired just random stuff. We try to get that stuff, put it on the shelf, clean it up, just inspect it so that somebody calls us up, says, hey, you have this such and such valve. I'm like, actually, yeah, we're gonna grab it. We've helped people out quite a bit. There's a big valve on the back of the press. It's called prefill valve. If that thing's not working, you're not extruding. It your main ramp's not gonna move, or it might move way slow. And if it runs too slow, then you can't push your aluminum.
So will you actually deploy teams out to the field to inspect and interact on site with a customer?
Oh, yeah. We have a full field service team. And then my engineer and myself can assist with, we interact with our team on site, or if we got to go on site, obviously we do that too. But we try to figure out what is the fastest way we can get the customers running, even if it's, I don't like band-aiding anything, but if I have some stuff, and we just did this, if I had some stuff sitting in the back, it's like, all right, let's cobble this together and send it to them. Hey, the parts you're waiting for are 8 to 12 weeks, and I have no control over that. That's what the vendor is. And oftentimes, it's not even just a vendor. It's the OEM of the parts that made those particular components, because it's all, a lot of, most of it's obsolete on these old presses from the 50s or 60s.
Yeah. So if you pick up that new client in Italy and you need somebody to tag along and help you out, I can come with in case you need an extra set just to carry stuff in and out,
eyes.
Just to help you. But that's amazing. I also wanted to point out, this was something else that came up in our discussion before coming on. You'd mentioned that the company size has doubled in the last few years since you're taking over, just about doubled.
Yeah.
Can you reflect on that for a moment, Jason? What's been the driver to that? That's rather remarkable growth. What's been the driver there?
So I bought the company in 2021, kind of the beginning of 2021. March 2nd, 2021 was, I signed my life away. The bank owns me now, that sort of. So obviously we know COVID was going on and just everybody's fighting to be able to get material, get their supplies, and then the cost of everything going through the roof. So I would definitely say inflation has something to do. If you just look at top line sales, all right, so there's some inflationary numbers in there, right? A thing that used to cost $5,000 is now $10,000. But I wouldn't attribute all of it to just inflation. Yeah. But the big portion of growth was these presses. I was really pushing to sell presses, and I don't know if it's good timing or if I actually was able to just do some good marketing. I really don't know what attributed to that. I'm guessing it was good timing. Everybody was trying to build their businesses back up that tail end of COVID. Yeah, we doubled our sales in just a couple of years. And if we sell a press, it's a significant amount of money.
Sure.
And then we were doing one or two presses a year.
Wow.
And right now we don't have a press sold, but we've gone through some transitions in the industry where some other people got, I'll say, bought out, and now they're big corporate companies. So a lot of my competitors have lost that personal interaction. All my customers, my business cards got my cell phone number on it. It's my number. It's not like a new number I pulled through the business. No, it's my number, and they can call me anytime. Whereas you get these new big companies that come in, they buy up these family ran businesses, and now who are you going to call? You're going to call your sales guy. He doesn't care. He's not going to push you to the front of the line if you're really down, really need help. And that's the feedback from my customers. I'm not just trying to rag on people. My customers are coming to me and they're saying, hey, such and such company, you know, we're down. They said, all right, we'll get in line. You're 18th on the list. We'll get to you when we finish number 17. Whereas my customers, they go down, we just move everything out of the way to help them.
And I think that sounds a common trait from the previous owner and yourself, that belief and commitment in these long-standing, long-term, whatever it takes, relationships. Very much a business that was built on trust, obviously precision, but also great relationships, which it would seem that by virtue of your actions, Jason, you're carrying forward. So in an industry that, you know, where there are bigger competitors, there always are, there's global competition, an industry that, you know, is really about equipment, about engineering, how do you convey that brand message of trust and relationship?
The industry is small. A lot of our customers know us because we've been around a long time. Some of our new customers are finding us because they're just searching the web. We have good SEO going on, and they find us. They're looking for help with their extrusion presses. And I think the biggest thing is when they ping the website, it's me, the president of the company, that's responding to those website inquiries. I don't have anybody else. I think anybody else even gets those. I think it comes straight to my inbox. Right away, you're getting connected with the president / owner of the company. And it's, hey, how can we help you? It's not a sales guy reaching out, oh, let me talk to my manager, see if we can do. No, it's none of that. It's me. And I try to convey that a little bit on our website, just any way I can. Hey, it's family owned, operated business. So you get that personal touch. I'm about the handshake, and we've lost a lot of that in businesses today. I have some people, they send these scope of works, and it's, what do you want it to do? Just tell me, and then we'll shake on it, and that's what it's going to do. We've really lost that personal connection in business. And I think you really lose it when you're trying to deal with these big companies. And it's understandable. I'm not going to talk to the CEO or the president of a multi-billion dollar company, because if they did that with every customer or vendor, they're just shaking hands all day. I understand it, but certainly that's what sets us apart.
For sure. And I think what you're reflecting on is also what sets apart a lot of family-governed businesses, whereas corporate or private equity backed or other or public companies tend to look at the world through 3 to 5 year sprints. We tend to look through the lens of decades and generations, and deeply held personal relationships matter, because that's what ultimately, everything's cool when things are right, but it's when things go wrong that you see the metal and merit of a business relationship or a company that's got your back. And it would sound like Dunaway is creating a legacy for having the back of the extrusion industry. And it's really
And that's definitely what Mike did. He was the guy. You call him up, and he'd jump in his car and shoot on up, fix your problem, drive back, and go to dinner with family. He was that guy you could call to solve your problem. And I'm trying to make sure that our company continues to build on his legacy and keep that relationship with our customers going.
Sure. So as you look ahead, certainly it sounds AI integration will be showing up in the near-term and long-term future of Dunaway. But as you look ahead, Jason, what do you see as the next chapter of Dunaway?
Yeah, so it's a great question. I mean, I wish I had a crystal ball. I was like, hey, yeah, this is what we're going to be doing. But no, definitely the AI, bringing that in-house. My field team, I have, we'll say, very experienced individuals who have been around here for quite some time. Eventually, they're going to want to not be around here. So the succession planning is also the next step. So bringing in a lot of younger guys and getting them trained up and then building out a couple more crews so that customer calls, yeah, I'll send this guy. So building the next layer of very knowledgeable individuals and training them properly, that's what everybody's fighting with. Again, mentioned it earlier, your guys retire, they have all the experience and you've lost it. No, nobody properly handed off a lot of that knowledge.
And a lot of the work, the presses you're working on, it's not like they were built yesterday or a year ago. Some of them
We can't just call up the OEM and say, hey, can I get the drawing of this? Oftentimes, we have Mike's collected drawings from 40 years of business. We have a lot of drawings of these old presses. Fortunately, I can walk back there and it's most of the time find something that's similar and we can fumble through a design and then obviously go on site, double check before making it. But I have a lot of growth plans. My presses, I'd like to try to really start pushing my presses and get some more presses out there that are pushing who knows what. We'll just say I'm working on a project with a material that I didn't even know you could extrude. That's really all I can say about that. But it's very interesting the things that we can get into in extrusion with the technology we've developed.
And it would sound like for all the things you're saying, if I were to summarize, I think it would be safe to say, Jason, that problem solving is very much in your DNA because all of these things are really, how do we break new ground? How do we problem solve in a bigger way? How do we use AI for good? And again, whereas a lot of people have that fear of, oh, it's going to take my job, of all the implications you've made or implementations that you're looking at, it's to protect them, protect the worker, to enhance their capabilities, to make them better, faster, smarter, and do their job with excellence as opposed to replace their job.
Absolutely.
Looking at AI in the healthiest of ways, manufacturing arena, where all those things are important. This has been great. Last question for you. If somebody listening wanted to learn more about your journey or learn more about Dunaway or some of the things you're working in AI, what's the best way for them to reach you?
Yeah, the best way is just our main website, dunawayinc.com. The ink is a little, we're not really Dunaway Inc. anymore, but I couldn't get dunaway.com. Somebody else owns that. So dunawayinc.com. And then we have links to our Facebook page, our LinkedIn page, and then somehow I'm sure through LinkedIn you can find me as well, just searching my name, obviously. So yeah, that's the primary place. We do have some YouTube videos, but again, you can go to our website, you can find the little links to our channels and stuff.
Awesome. Jason, thanks so much for sharing your journey, your story, and where you're going. It's certainly exciting. Again, we've been speaking with Jason Markajohn, president of Dunaway, a leader in extrusion press systems and a pioneer and bringing AI into advanced manufacturing. And I'm your host, Ed D'Elia, and this has been another episode of Growing Up B2B. Thanks so much for joining us, and we'll see you next time. Jason, thanks so much for being with us today.
Thanks, Ed. Appreciate it.
Hey, thanks so much for tuning into Growing Up B2B. To explore more episodes and insights, visit podcast.delianet.com. And if you've enjoyed this episode, please give us a rating or review on your podcast platform of choice. Having worked with hundreds of family-led businesses across my career, and being a second-generation leader myself, I'm on a mission to help every family business I meet achieve next-level growth for their organization. So feel free also to connect with me on LinkedIn and let's support each other. You can also find out more about my company at DeliaNet.com. Again, I'm your host, Ed D'Elia, and thanks so much for joining us today. Take care.